We heard Sarah Davis Buchner play the second Rhapsody of George Gershwin, also known as the Rhapsody in Rivets. It's from 1931. Also, around that time, a choreographer, untried choreographer named Busby Berkeley, was just getting started, and Hollywood soon discovered an amazing talent. And I bring it up because I'm about to have a whole history of this laid out for you in the form of modern entertainment that the Kalamazoo Civic is going to provide this month. The musical Dames at Sea is coming to the stage January 21st. And I have on the line director Tony Humrichhauser, who is also the artistic director of the Kalamazoo Civic. And from the cast, Ivy McCord, who plays the naive young heroine Ruby, and Matthew Schuster, who is the sailor named Lucky. And all three are on speakerphone over at the Kalamazoo Civic with me on the line. Hello, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Yay. Well, it's wonderful to connect, even though it's on the phone line these days with still this virus floating around. Perhaps we could start with the adjustment here. I know the maybe printed material from earlier in the season would say that the show starts this week, but in fact it has been changed because of circumstances, right, Tony?
That's right. We decided to put the show on a pause for a week, so we delayed our opening, and so we're going to be opening January 21st, and we're really, really excited about the show. We can't wait to show the community something so beautiful and something that hasn't been done here for quite some time.
So Dames at Sea is the name of the show, and the little I have listened to this soundtrack, it is absolutely pays tribute to the 1930s and, you know, Gershwin and all the other terrific songwriters of the era. Who put this together? Was it this a labor of love, you know, because of how inspiring that time was?
It was. You know, I'll tell you, in the late 50s, in the mid 50s, there was a lot of revivals that were throwbacks to the 20s. And the most popular of the time was The Boyfriend. The Boyfriend had an amazing run on Broadway, and that was a Valentine to the 1920s. So we excel into the 60s, and of course there's all these cycles, right? So then they cycle into to the 1930s, and the playwright George Hameson and the lyricist Jim Wise and composer came together and said, why don't we do the same type of show, but as a tribute to the musicals of Busby Berkeley in the 1930s. So they started workshopping a show together at a really wonderful theater in the West Village called the Cafe Chino. And out of it comes Dames at Sea. And a lot of the numbers are musical tributes, musical parodies to numbers from existing Warner Brothers musicals like 42nd Street, Dames, the Gold Diggers of 1935, 36, 37. But it's a wonderful tribute to the time when boy meets girl, girl meets girl, boy meets boy. They come together and they put on a show. And it's a really, it's the perfect show for a time like now. It looks back at a time that was very difficult for our nation, and yet people rallied and came. It was a call to arms for them, and they rallied, and they created beautiful, beautiful art, escapist art.
That's right. There is so much optimism that flows out of these period movies, a can-do-itism, and under circumstances where, I think in this case also, you know, the theater is about to be shut down or something, you know, is going to just destroy the show, and they find a way to make the show go on.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of the Warner Brothers musical care were pre-code. So not only were they beautiful and wholesome, but they were a little naughty. and that was okay. So James at Sea has moments like that. They're very brief, but there's something for everybody in these Warner Brothers musicals, and there's something for everybody in James at Sea. Very similar to what you would see even in a Warner Brothers cartoon, right? The audience base is for everyone, from kids to the young at heart.
But, you know, the costumes are, I can vividly think of how silky and feathery everything is, and how, you know, you see, you can be very suggestive in both the costumes.
Absolutely. Well, if you think about it, it was a very difficult time. And, you know, a lot of, if we understand our history a little bit, you know, to be a ensemble member, a chorus member in a musical in the 1930s in New York City during the Depression was not easy. It was very difficult, very long hours, a lot of hard work, but what people do for love, right? And that's where the beautiful stories come out, right? People do these things because they can't do anything but sing, dance, act. And that's what Dames at Sea brings us. It's just a tribute to song and dance musicals of the 30s, and we're so lucky. But the history is really interesting, Kara, of the show itself and the theater that it premiered at.
That's right. You mentioned that it originated in the 1960s, Dames at Sea, but not fully formed. And it would have first been seen by a small crowd.
That's right. So a man named Joe Chino from Buffalo, New York, in the early 50s, moves to the West Village. And he was a gay entrepreneur, and he was looking for his tribe. So he went and he opened a coffee house in the West Village. And at the coffee house, he wanted to give a platform for people like himself and give them opportunities to perform. There were not many venues for that. So what he does is he sets up some milk crates and puts a stage on the milk crates, and he gives a voice to everybody in the village, including people like Lanford Wilson, John Guare, Sam Shepard, and our composer and our playwright for this show, for Dames at Sea. And it turns out to be a hub for new playwrights and up-and-coming theater. So it is officially the first gay theater in New York City, and also the first off-Broadway theater in New York City. So the theater itself that housed Dames at Sea has a beautiful legacy, and we're very, very fortunate to have had it.
I did not know the history of not only the show, but the man who created it and made a space for a show like this to happen. And this is the 60s. This is a time when people didn't even talk about homosexuality or anything.
And the sensibility in musical theater, there's a freedom in musical theater, a liberation in musical theater that goes hand in hand, I think, with the movement. So I think and we're talking 1966. They're closed in 1968 because of Stonewall. And so it's an interesting work to work on historically, as well as, and the material itself is just a joy to work on. But it's a very important show.
It could have disappeared like so many shows, but it has thrived over the decades. It says here on the Wikipedia page it had a London run. There's even a television adaptation. And so there must be something really fun, cohesive, and just extremely solid about this that attracted you, Tony.
Well, you know what? It's a seven-person musical. Everybody is on their own vocal line. And it is the biggest small musical that I've ever worked on in my life. It is incredibly deceptive. You know, you think of the Cafe Chino, it's at maybe 100 people, right, on this postage stamp stage. Well, you move it into our beautiful Parish Theater, and you have to realize the space and say, well, how do we visualize it in this space? So we've expanded it, you know, and Delaney McKenzie is doing the lights. They're gorgeous. David Kine's set is absolutely stunning. Lori Hatfield is our music director. She has done just an exquisite job at putting together the music. You know, there are 14 musical numbers. Every number is different from the last. It's in a different style. There is ballroom. There is tap. There's a character song. There's a torch song. There is something for everybody in the show. And, of course, all of it was choreographed by Lisa Denklau, who is superb. And as far as the tops and taps, you don't get better than Lisa Denklau.
You have worked with her for a number of years now, since you came to the Civic and put your faith in footwork. At least, well, I do want to hear more about the colors and the look and the possible projections. But let's bring in some more voices here, since we have both Ivy McCord and Matthew Schuster. Ivy, nice to meet you by phone.
It's nice to meet you too.
Tell us who you play in Dames at Sea.
I play a girl named Ruby. She's a very sweet and easy loving character. I like playing her because she's just so simple, and it's so fun to just get to come to rehearsal and just like totally relax and just fall into this character that's so nice and loving, and I just love being able to be her.
Does the role require, of course it requires singing and acting and also dancing?
Yeah, there's a lot of tap that Ruby does, and I think that's great because I love tapping.
And you know, Kara, I'll interject here. Ivy is an amazing tap dancer. We are so fortunate to have her in the cast. You know, playing a role that was originated by Bernadette Peters. You know, Bernadette Peters originated the role at the Cafe Chino when she was 16 years old, and Ivy is following in her footsteps just beautifully.
Wow. Well, there's a name I know. Tony, Bernadette Peters. Ivy, you're making your first appearance in a production at the Civic, I understand. And how has your experience been so far?
It's been so amazing. I love working with all of these people, and it's been such a great opportunity.
Do you have full-time, you know, employment where you are just looking for a way to be, you know, in a production as an addition to what you do, or is this your focus?
I am in high school, so that's like the only thing that I do outside of theater.
And we're so lucky because, you know, when Ivy auditioned, we had no, we don't ask ages. She just walked in and was a superb star from the get-go. And then we find out that she's in high school, and
we're so lucky.
So it's a parallel story to the Bernadette Peters story. You know, you have a young up-and-comer make their debut and become a star. And Ivy is certainly that for us. We're very lucky to have her.
Well, high school is a very good focus as well. So keep at it. and are you fairly new to Kalamazoo, Ivy?
I don't live in Kalamazoo, and I haven't really, like, done any theater around this area.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, yeah.
It says in your biography, originally from California. And when did you move to Michigan?
I moved when I was fairly young. I'd say probably, like, one or something like that.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, yeah, I might have asked you about your California experiences, but you probably don't remember much about that. Okay, Ivy, tell me about the song It's You.
It's You is so sweet, and it's like one of my favorite numbers to do in the show because I just get to like dance and sing, and it's such a like nice song, and I just love that number.
We will hear a recording now of Bernadette Peters singing the song It's You. And a reminder to our listeners that I have on the line director Tony Humrichhauser, Ivy McCord, who plays Ruby, and we're about to chat in a few minutes with Matthew Schuster, who plays Lucky, in Dames at Sea, which starts on January 21st at the Kalamazoo Civic. You'll find full details and current COVID policy at kazoocivic.com.
It isn't Jean Harlow, it isn't Greta Garbo, it's you, it's you, it's you.
It's not Leslie Howard or even Noel Coward. It's you, it's you, it's you. It isn't Bert Wheeler.
It isn't Ruby Keeler.
No one of them, no, none of them will do. My lucky star came tumbling from the blue. It's not Rudy Valley
or Marion Talley.
Not one of them will do.
That is testing my entire knowledge of Turner Classic Movies right there. It is so perfectly period music as well. What a fun score.
It is a fun score. And, you know, Kara, this is it's a neat time to talk a little bit about of kind of what we've been contending with a lot of this material is, you know, classic musicals under the you know, Me Too movement and after Black Lives Matter, we've really started investigating the classic canon quite a bit. So some of those lyrics in there even are would be questionable to today's audience. So what we did was we went to the Copyright House themselves and we talked to them about sensitive material within the show, and they spoke with the people that control the estate, and we were given permission to make alterations. So one of the wonderful things about working on Dames of Sea is not only the material itself, but taking the material into the 21st century and giving it a new life, a new voice that is for everyone, and not just and removing anything that would be questionable. You know, it's going to be a hard task for all of us with the entire musical theater canon, but we're really, really proud of that fact.
Well, I feel like we're getting a small glimpse of what directors like you are doing behind the scenes. You know, it's not just about putting on a show and everyone having a good time. There's care to be taken. There is messages to be explored, and it is probably not easy to, you know. The Music Theater International, for example, is a company that, you know, dictates how its shows will be performed. And so to go back and negotiate can actually be, you can easily get a no or and beyond.
Well, and we're very lucky. Our executive director, Laura Cervic, has been wonderful. She's so skilled at negotiating with these companies, and because of it, it's going to open doors for us. You know, we have 100 years of musical theater. You know, Showboat was written in 1928, mm-hmm. 100 years anniversary is coming up. From that point on, we have thousands of musicals that are out there that will have to be kind of gone through with a fine-tooth comb, but it's going to require executive producers, executive directors and artistic directors to step forward and negotiate with the companies to alter and revise the material to make it suitable for a 21st century audience. So we're really, really proud of that.
May I ask a sidebar question that has to do with public domain? A lot of composers' works are becoming public domain. I think it's 1926 now. Is that also something that is talked about in theater, music theater? I mean, do playwrights and these pieces do eventually come under public domain or not?
Well, yes, they do. And what ends up happening there is then it becomes a public responsibility. You're able to alter the material to a certain extent but still, there's still negotiations that have to happen with the estate. If mm-hmm. the estate holds on to the copyright a little longer, you still have to negotiate with them. It's going to be a lot of heavy lifting to come. But when you look at the material itself, it's worth working on, right? Because it's part of our history, and we're so proud to be part of that. Being instruments of change. That's really, it's going to be lovely to do that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the works in the public domain.
Thank you for sharing that, like I said, a glimpse behind the scenes. Matthew, sorry to neglect you for the last 20 minutes.
Oh, no, you're fine.
I do know off air what you had for breakfast, but that's about it. would you like to share a little bit about what made you audition for this show and what drew you to theater and what your background might be?
Yeah, sure. What drew me, what made me audition is music theater for me is a way to kind of get away from everyday life and a way to recharge artistically and enjoy and connect with other people in the community and to do something together. So it's kind of that break for me a little bit. What drew me to this show is I have always loved the big old musicals, movie musicals, being a part of musicals. I tend to audition primarily for musicals. there's just something about musicals I've always loved. And so the music of the show and the style of the show was just something I've always enjoyed. So one of my favorite roles I ever played was in White Christmas. And, you know, it's that similar kind of feel of a style of a show and fun. And so I was like, well, I'm going to go and try it out.
Wonderful.
And here I am.
And full disclosure, your wife, Jane Schuster, is the publicity director of Kalamazoo Civic. Yes, it's a small town. People end up with many different roles, and it's nothing to do with nepotism, I'm sure.
No, actually, I was cast before she was hired. So,
okay, there you go.
So, yeah, that has nothing to do with it there. But we actually, Jane and I actually met doing theater. So theater has a long history in our family and fun, and I've been doing theater for years in many different communities and have always found that community theater, like the Kalamazoo Civic, is just a great way to meet people, get in the community, and enjoy performing and your artistic abilities.
I almost wish I could go back and see the Civic again for the first time, although I know it very well now, but it is a marvelous gem of a space and a facility. What did you think, Matthew?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there aren't, I can't think of other communities, anyone that I've been in that has facilities like the Kalamazoo Civic. You know, if any theater I've performed with, if they've had any kind of resources, they've been tied to like a community college, and it's been a community college theater that's open to the public to audition, where they have staff doing costumes for you and taking care of all that. Any other community theater I've been a part of throughout the country, you know, we've had to find our costumes, be a part of doing that, helping to take care of sets. And then all of them are mostly borrowed spaces or a stage that's shared within a facility where they come in and they build and they go. But for this community to have a facility and an organization like Kalamazoo Civic, it's really a gem for the Kalamazoo community and one that should really be treasured.
Mm, completely dedicated to all aspects of live theater. Let's get back to the production, Dames at Sea. I want to tell listeners again that it starts January 21st, a week later than originally planned, and tickets are available at kazoocivic.com. You can also call and talk to someone at the ticket office. I think that's 342-1313. Am I right?
343-1313. So 269-343-1313.
Okay. I'll get it back by the next time we talk, all right? I do want to end the hour with a quick glimpse at what's coming up as well following Dames at Sea. But back to the current production, I was going to ask about the color and the look, and are you using the brand new digital backdrop machine? I can't remember what it's called.
Well, this is the interesting thing. We've moved this show into the parish space intentionally, because the joy of, you know, when this was produced in a smaller venue, the joy of Dames at Sea is proximity, I believe. And, you know, there have been revivals that have put it up on a proscenium stage, and it kind of loses something. So we decided we're going to put it in the parish space. It's being performed in the round. But I will tell you, David Kine has designed a set that looks right out of a Bugsy Berkeley number. It is breathtakingly beautiful. So the set itself is very Art Deco. It's very of the period, and the costumes themselves are just beautiful, bright 1930s rehearsal wear, as well as, you know, when you have a sailors on a ship in a musical, you're going to have some red, white, and blue somewhere. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really, it is Elaine Kaufman, who did the costumes, has done an exquisite job at putting the looks together, down to Technicolor rain slickers for the Raining in My Heart number. So it's just really going to be a lovely, lovely visual piece of candy, put it that way.
Here's the problem. Go ahead, Matt.
I was just saying, it's been a lot of fun for the entire cast to work in the round. Many of us haven't performed in the round before, and so taking a show like this, playing the round with seven people performing these huge production numbers, has just been a lot of fun and a lot of work. And Tony gave us all our homework to look at the old musical movies and get the style down. So the cast has been dedicated and just having a great time on a stage in the round, and we think people are just going to absolutely enjoy it.
Speaking of the cast, you mentioned it's a cast of seven. And who are some of the other players that we'll see when this show goes up?
My counterpart is Brooke Boyd, who plays Joan. So Joan and Lucky are the two kind of coupled up with me. And then the sailor is Danny Mora.
Yes, and Britton Schumacher is playing Mona Kent, the leading lady.
Oh.
Gary Willoughby is playing the befuddled, frustrated stage director. And last but not least, we have Jordan Aw playing our leading man, Dick, in the show. So, and the names in the show, by the way, are all tributes to those characters from those actors from the Warner Brothers musical. So you have Dick playing the Dick Powell role, Ruby playing the Ruby Keeler role, Joan playing Joan Blondell. So those are not as well in the show. So that's the cast of the show. And we also have Laurie Hatfield and Hal Hobson doing a two piano piece orchestration, which is just beautiful to listen to as well.
Oh, good. Two terrific players. That'll be fun. Okay, I want to go back to Busby Berkeley for a quick thing. You have seven people. How do you pull off even attempting a Busby Berkeley style choreography?
Well, that's because the show is a Valentine to the shows of the 30s. That's where the parody comes in. You know, they always say, "Well, here comes the fleet. Oh no, the boat sank off the ship." So they're always waiting for the chorus to arrive, but there's no chorus. So then they become the chorus for all the numbers. So that's where the charm is in the show. So let me tell you, I am very blessed to have the seven performers that I have, because they are doing everything. And as soon as one number is done, they're putting tap shoes on and going into the next number. It is a marathon that is going to be wonderful to witness. And I think audiences will get a huge kick at how skilled and how much fun we're having as an ensemble in the show.
For listeners who just tuned in, maybe in the middle of our interview later today, it will be available online. And you'll also see some of the cast production photos to get an idea of how it will look in the web article that will be on WMUK.org. And I think we have about 5 minutes left, Tony. So, yes, I am going to ask about what is still to come in this season at the Civic, following Dames at Sea. And I'm going to put myself on your webpage and see if I can follow along as well. Let's see, productions.
Well, sure.
Okay.
Productions. Yeah. So after Dames at Sea, Connor Clock from Queer Theater Kalamazoo is directing a beautiful production in the Carver Center of the play Art by Yasmin Ariza. We're really, really excited about that production. We have some new twists to that production casting-wise, which we're very excited about.
Mm-hmm.
Then we move on to the main stage, to Agatha Christie's Murder on the Orient Express, being directed by Kathy Mulay. The cast is fantastic. They're in rehearsals. You know, Ken Ludwig has done this adaptation, and it is funny, and it's suspenseful, and it is quick, and I think audiences are just going to be blown away by it. And that's going to be on the main stage.
Tony, I will admit, one of my pandemic crutches has been Agatha Christie, like nonstop mysteries.
Oh, well, you are in for a treat, and I will tell you visually what our production team has prepared for you is just breathtaking. It is going to be a beautiful show itself.
And that's coming up in February, very soon.
That's right, February 11th. And then And then we come back across the street here to the Parish, and Anthony Hamilton is directing August Wilson's beautiful play, The Piano Lesson. Mm. And we're so excited to be able to present that in our Parish Theater. It's a really, really important play, and I can't wait for people to experience it in the Parish space, because that proximity, once again, will allow the audience to be enveloped into the action of the play, which I really think is important. And then we move on to the Penguin Project, which is our wonderful program here in Kalamazoo with our youth. And they're going to be producing Schoolhouse Rock Live Jr. on our main stage. And that is being directed by Jackie Starr. And we're really, really excited about that, having our youth helping youth working with youth on stage to perform. And that's very, very exciting for us. And then after that, we have our Senior Readers Theater production of Leaving Iowa. And now that's March 25th through April 3rd, and that's going to be happening in the Carver Center. And that is being directed by Kristen Tyrrell, and she's superb, and we're very, very excited. But those auditions are coming up. So if anybody listening out there would like to audition, they should jump on the website, and because those auditions are yet to come.
Senior, you said that was Senior Readers Theater, which is allows people who are seniors to use some tools in order to do the show. I mean, you are allowed to keep some words in front of you if necessary. Is that true?
You get to hold the script. And you know what? I misspoke, because we just have retitled it to just Readers Theater here at the Civic. I just misspoke. The old habits die hard.
Yeah, that's what I remember as.
Yeah, but what's wonderful about that is, if you've never done theater, if this is something that you wanted to try to do, you know, this is a wonderful way to introduce yourself. You have the security of the script, along with a superb director that will be able to help you through and navigate those scripts and performance. It's really a great opportunity for somebody that would like to try theater.
Terrific.
And that's Leaving Iowa, and that is March 25th to the 8th. And then following that, we're really excited. Our youth come back to the stage, to the Parish Theater, and they're going to be producing Disney's Descendants. And we're very, very excited about that production as well.
Wow, that's a big deal.
Kind of a hot title. It is a hot title for us right now. And, you know, we're excited. It's good for us to produce things that youth themselves are excited about performing in. So we're excited about giving them that opportunity. And those auditions will be coming up as well as our finale, which is Xanadu, which I'm directing myself, and I cannot wait to that. Oh, by the way, Disney's Descendants is being directed by Nick Dalton. So that's our docket. We're really, really excited about what we have to offer, and hopefully people will get out and understand that we're following such wonderful protocols of the Civic. Mm-hmm. COVID protocols are just superb. And so we encourage our audiences to jump online, look at our protocols. We keep you safe so you can come to the theater and enjoy live theater once again.
Tony and Ivy and Matthew, I appreciate so much getting to spend some time with you talking about things we all love, that is live performance and, of course, the Kalamazoo Civic Theater. Again, information is at kazoocivic.com. Tony and Matthew and Ivy, thank you very much for chatting with me here on Classical WMUK.
Thank you, Kara.
Thank you.
Okay, goodbye for now.